Good morning. I'd like to welcome everyone to this morning's meeting of the Local Redevelopment Authority of the City of Mesa. And the first and primary item on today's agenda is to hear a presentation and discuss the redevelopment plan. So we'll turn over to Mr. Bill Jabiniak.
Thank you, Mayor. Good morning. Good morning, Council.
Let me start with some introductions here this morning. To my left, your right, Mr. Barry Steinberg from Kootok Rock is a consultant for us. The infamous Mr. Patrick Murphy to my right, and Dr. Werner Dahm from ASU's Security and Defense Systems Initiative. I had to make sure I got that right. I also want to acknowledge and have them do a quick wave. Todd Hardy from ASU, is one of our partners, is here as well this morning. Dane Mullinex from Alion Science and Technology is here. And also Jeff Crockett, who's chair of our Economic Development Advisory Board, who had a large role in things here, is here this morning as well. This morning we're asking to approve the submission and the resolution, I should say, of the homeless submission report and the redevelopment plan for the Air Force Research Lab. Staff, and with unanimous support of the advisory board, has recommended that you adopt that resolution, directing staff to submit the plan to both the Air Force and the and HUD. I think it's important that the plan has really been a lot of hard work, and a lot of folks have had a role in some of that, but it's been developed really to reuse the Air Force Research Lab in somewhat of a similar capacity to where it's at today. We're asking for an economic development conveyance, really continue the very interesting and very informative research that goes on for our national economy, and I think we're going to get into a lot more of detail that has there. You're going to hear a little bit from Barry about a couple of next steps with our interim lease, and you're going to have a full presentation from Dr. Dahm at the end. I think it's important for our partners to be able to demonstrate some of the initiatives that they're bringing to the Air Force Research Lab. So with that, let's go on to the screen here. I think we have the vision and goals of what the LRA is after, which is saving jobs, creating more jobs. So we're retaining jobs, creating more, and then growing those opportunities as well. That's been standard, and that's been at the forefront of what we've tried to put forward with an economic development strategy. With that, Mr. Murphy.
Good morning. As Bill mentioned, we've been working on this document for quite a few months now, and the public review period was completed on January 13th. And with that, we added some language. The executive summary was added from the documents that you received in December, and then there were some minor word changes. But basically, the recommendations that were in the redevelopment plan and the homeless submission report have not changed. The executive summary really does provide a great synopsis of what's in the redevelopment plan. We did receive letters of support for these documents from Alion Science and Technology, the East Valley Partnership, GPEC, and as Bill mentioned earlier, the Economic Development Advisory Board unanimously recommended approval of these documents. Just to go over again what the homeless submission report is, it's basically to outline what our outreach effort was to the homeless providers within Maricopa County. And it documents how we communicated with them and also points out that we did not receive any applications, a notice of interest from homeless providers. We did receive a letter of interest, but that was later withdrawn. And we asked our consultant, Mr. Swiger, who wasn't able to come to today's meeting, to call a couple of those providers just to verify why they did not submit. And basically, it's for obvious reasons that the buildings really just don't meet their needs. There's no adequate public transportation to the site. And for those reasons, they did not make a submittal. The redevelopment plan discusses basically a number of the analysis that was done for the site. The traffic analysis, a building site analysis, facilities analysis. And what it all boiled down to is it helped us with the develop three alternatives for you to consider. And staff is recommending the preferred alternative, which is economic development conveyance. In the staff report, it talks about the other two alternatives and the reasons why we are not recommending those. I can go into detail with those if you'd like. But basically, we are recommending that the city and the LRA pursue an economic development conveyance for the site. We believe that that meets the vision and the goals that were established earlier in the year, maintaining and creating those jobs and capitalizing on the characteristics of the site. And with that, I'll let Mr. Steinberg go over the next steps that we'll be undertaking after today's meeting.
Hey, Patrick, if you could, I mean, I know the executive summary includes the rationale behind why alternative three was chosen. If you could just give a real quick overview as to why alternative three was the preferred alternative.
Yes, I will. The first alternative was to try to use the site as a typical office industrial site. And one of the things that the analysis, all the reports that were done for it, it pointed out is that the facilities are actually very old and outdated. And there's so much vacant office and industrial space in the surrounding area, as well as in the whole East Valley, that we don't believe that we would be able to fill this site if we did not use it to its the maximum capacity that it has. And what we're talking about there is, although the buildings are old and antiquated for today's typical office user, there is a segment that uses, for the defense industry, specialized research that's capable of being done there with the specialized roof and the walls. There's some words I can't use.
Because regular offices, they're not very marketable.
Yes, and so that's what that's
because
what
of the, some of the specific things related to the activities that were going on there.
Right.
They're unique in that the uniqueness isn't in this in the bricks and mortar. It's in how those bricks and mortars were used and some of the specific security specifically items that are embedded in those buildings that make it special.
Yes,
is that accurate?
That's a very accurate statement. Thank you.
All right.
The second alternative that was proposed is we did receive a notice of interest from ASU in partnership with Alliance Science and Technology. They were going for a public benefit conveyance through the Department of Education. With that, there are some restrictions that concerned us. And in conversations with ASU, we believe that a stronger partnership would be met through the economic development conveyance, where those restrictions may hinder the maximum reuse of the facility. Specifically, it's a specialized research that's able to go there. Sometimes there are some restrictions on what the classified research that can and cannot occur through a public benefit conveyance. And we believe through the economic development conveyance, we'll be able to both have that partnership that we want through ASU and other higher educational institutions, as well as the defense contractors like Alliance Science and Technology.
Okay, so would it be accurate to say that we can accomplish probably most, if not all, of the things that ASU proposed in their educational conveyance, but if we go with an economic conveyance, we have additional opportunity? So we're really not foreclosing ASU. We're not pushing them out. And the reason I want to make this clear is that I had a question actually from the media that said, well, gee, why are you not including ASU? And I think what we need to make clear is that with alternative three, we believe that we can accomplish what ASU and Alliant proposed, but we actually have more flexibility, can do that plus without those restrictions. Did I give the right answer?
That's a very, very well spoken. And towards that end, that's one of the reasons why we do have Dr. Don here.
Right. Alternative three assumes a partnership, involvement, however you want to define it, with ASU Alliant as participants in this process and as primary users in these facilities.
Mayor, I think that hits it on the head, but it's not exclusive to Alliant and ASU. It opens it up to a variety of partners, and I think that's the beauty of this. We have some great tenants to start with and some great programs that they're bringing here. Now how do we grow this? And this opens it up to a variety of users.
Okay, I just wanted to make that clear because there were some questions. When it first comes out that we didn't choose alternative two, there were some misunderstandings that somehow that foreclosed ASU and all others, and that's not at all the case. I mean,
no, okay. I think their presence is
the exact opposite. I mean, I think we have more of an opportunity with them and with others if we have this flexibility.
Absolutely.
Okay?
Thank you.
Okay, if there's no other questions, I'll let Mr. Steinberg discuss our next steps that we'll be undertaking.
Sure. Two quick comments that you should be aware of. First, because we do not have homeless providers requesting the property, after essentially going above and beyond to reach out to them, that greatly simplifies the process. When you have competition from the homeless providers and you have to go through the Department of Housing and Urban Development for their evaluation of our decision of to take them or not take them and their financial ability to maintain the property, even though HUD is supposed to complete that process in 60 days, I'm not aware of a single case in which they've ever come close. It slows down everything. Here, we sort of have a no-brainer.
That's really surprising to hear. I've never had that experience.
I know how shocked you must be, sir.
Shocked, absolutely yes, shocked.
Here we have a very simple process because we did above and beyond in terms of our outreach, as indicated because of the configuration and nature of the facilities as well as public transportation access. These don't lend themselves to that marketplace. The second issue is with respect to the ASU public benefit conveyance request for educational purposes. As you indicated, what we have devised in this process is a much more flexible capability by not limiting ourselves for 30 years to purely educational purposes. And education, like many things, is in the eyes of the beholder, and we end up potentially somewhere down the road in a food fight over whether that is education or not. But having said that, ASU is and is increasing its capability as a magnet for some highly technical specialized research and development, and the truth of the matter is that this facility is uniquely configured to support that, and so that's what we have focused on in terms of maximizing. Going forward, the issue right now, the issue du jour, which we hope to resolve momentarily, we're waiting for a letter. We want to negotiate an interim lease with the Air Force. An interim lease typically would probably not be for more than 5 years, although it could be, because ultimately what we want to do is negotiate an economic development conveyance. We have to submit the EDC application. It must be approved, and when it is approved, we can then enter into what is known as a lease in furtherance of conveyance, where we are the contract purchaser, and it's just a matter of obtaining. And by purchase, that's not to suggest what the dollar value is. Our EDC application will essentially be a no-cost EDC application because we believe that the capital investment that is required to bring the facility up to the uses that we intend to use it for could be significant, and we're going to have to figure out how to pay for that. But that's another day, another meeting, quite frankly. But we hope to get the property at zero, because we think there is a negative value associated with the capital investment necessary. Right now, because we do not have an approved economic development conveyance, we're not eligible for a LIFOC, a lease in furtherance of conveyance, so the interim lease is the approach. The Air Force is, I believe, on the edge of making that decision of, yes, we will proceed with an interim lease. There have been a lot of backroom negotiations involving a whole lot of people to get them to that point. As you can imagine, the Air Force mission with respect to the research lab is to turn out the lights and lock the gate. That's their focus. Our needs in terms of economic development, job creation, tax base, and things like that, that's not number one on the Air Force's priority right now. And so we have had to work to convince them that it is the smart and right thing to do. The driver for this is that the facility presently is cleared and approved for by the defense security agencies involved to accommodate highly classified work. That is not a walk in the park to obtain. It involves physical security, involves electronic eavesdropping capability, and our concern is that if the Air Force leaves, locks the gate, and turns out the lights, that security classification, if it doesn't disappear, it will certainly then be subject to reexamination. What we want to do is take over the maintenance and operation of the facility before the Air Force leaves so that there is no hiatus in that high-level security clearance. Now, security clearances have two components. Number one, There has to be a mission in the facility requiring that clearance. And second, the facility itself must have the attributes necessary to protect improper intrusion for national security purposes. So we are working to ensure that there's no hiatus in terms of the security clearance aspect of the building itself, but simultaneous with that, we are also working to ensure that we can integrate classified missions into the building as the Air Force makes space available to us, but before they have actually left. The result would be what is described by some as a hot transfer, a transfer with no break in the ability of the building to accommodate classified missions, and we will have an ongoing classified mission there at that point in time. And now it becomes a matter of just negotiating the terms and conditions of the interim lease. What are the holdback areas for the Air Force? Who's paying for what on utilities? It should not come as a surprise to you to learn that when you go into a military facility, there typically is one electric meter somewhere near the front gate, one gas meter someplace, one telephone line leading in. And so the allocation of who pays for what, those are the kinds of issues that we're focused on as we move forward on this. But there are some things that will have to be negotiated in that interim lease process, and we are working to do that as quickly as we possibly can, including meetings with Air Force lawyers to negotiate that interim lease.
Question.
You know, I've tried to explain that many times. I haven't even come close. That was pretty amazing. That was Barry. That was pretty good.
They had 4 minutes.
You now have it on tape.
I've never used the word hiatus in a long time, and I like that. That's great. Thank you. No, that was very clear. Just to repeat, as I understand, we're really looking at a three-step process here. Then the hot lease, the interim lease, as you call it, mm-hmm. that is working. That strives to give us. With no hiatus, there you can see. I'm trying to work it in.
You're almost there.
That's giving us immediate occupancy. I'll just use that. I know it's not like tomorrow, but it's before the Air Force leaves. Working toward what you call the lease
and furtherance of conveyance.
Okay, lease and furtherance of conveyance. So that would be the next step. And because it takes time to actually do the actual legal work to physically transfer the property to our ownership, should we be approved under the plan, then that would replace this interim lease and then ultimately would have an actual conveyance.
There's a missing step. Between the interim lease and the lease and furtherance of conveyance, there is an approved economic development conveyance.
Yeah, you can't have the lease and furtherance of conveyance until you have the approved economic development plan.
Yes, sir.
Okay. But there's really, as far as the control of the property, there's a four-step process then. This interim lease, the approval of the plan, the lease and furtherance of conveyance, and the actual conveyance, correct?
That's correct, sir.
And that whole process could take years,
yes,
right?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
It typically has in other base closures.
But we'll have control, if all works out right, and if we can get the Air Force to get to the point you're talking about and get the interim lease, we actually can have physical control of the property and work through these steps so that there's no break.
Yes, sir. There are two significant aspects of getting from the LIFOC to the deed. First of all, if you're looking, and I don't know if this would be the case here, but if you're looking to use the real property as security on a loan to do the capital improvement, lenders are reluctant typically to lend on a lease, even a long-term lease.
Right.
Okay. The second issue that you run into is when you have a lease and furtherance of conveyance, the Air Force is still entitled to the property.
Right.
And therefore, most of your capital work that would be done, you will need their approval. Not that they would be difficult and say, no, you can't do that, but there is that mother may I step that you have to go through.
They are in a unique position that they're both the owner and a tenant.
If they remain...
If they remain and we have the interim lease... They're our tenant, but they're also the owner. So that's
correct.
A unique situation.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Vice Mayor.
Is it Vice Chair, since this is...
Vice Mayor, the Vice Chair.
Vice Chair, the Vice Mayor of Vice. I got a lot of vices.
I don't care.
You got a lot of vices.
Do it. I'm going to try to use the word hiatus here in a sentence, but it's probably not going to come out quite right. So let's just stick with this.
I can't believe I did that.
See what you did? You can't set this group off. Serious question, though. There's been an understandable level of anxiety among the current tenants and employees who are there. This is, as you described, a long federal bureaucratic process to get full conveyance. And we've talked a lot about the property, but it's really not just the property we want. We want those folks who are there. We want the minds that are there. We want the research that they're doing, because they're the ones that are going to create jobs and wealth and employment for our community. So through this process, what does this next step mean to them and their ability to stay in Mesa, create jobs in Mesa, and have at least some level of stability and over
understand
the next
there is if I use the word anxiety, I think it's an understatement. We're taking people who have been dedicated employees in this community, both for the federal government and defense contractors, for many years, and all of a sudden, because of a 2000 not all of a sudden but because of a 2005 BRAC decision, they're being asked to uproot in some cases and go elsewhere or just lose their job. And as noted earlier, this is a pretty highly qualified, well-educated technical resource. And so they're important to the community, but it's important to them to have continuity of employment. Until we have a lease, an interim lease, we're not in a position to go out to the ABC company and say, okay, we've got an interim lease. Here's some space. Can you use the space and continue whatever it was that you were doing? And so that's why we have been working very hard for the last 3-4 months now to get that interim lease on place. I think it is noteworthy to comment on the Department of Veterans Affairs. And although I'm a veteran myself, I'm not real pleased with the way they handle this, because they screened this property for federal use by another federal agency and essentially tied the property up for a lengthy period of time that we could have been on the street working the very issues that we're now rushing to work. So instead of getting a 6-year window until the 15th of September of 2011, we're essentially compressed into, what, about 18 months or so? Yeah. So we're doing 6 years' worth of work in 18 months or less. And so, I mean, everybody that I'm dealing with on this side of the table understands the mission, which is get that interim lease as quickly as you possibly can so that we're in a position to offer tenants use of the facility who are then in a position to employ or retain their employees that are out there. But we lost at least 4.5 years in the planning process for no fault of our own, because the VA essentially bit off more than they could chew. I realize that's not very complimentary to another federal agency, but that's essentially what happened here. So we understand that, and that's mission. We got it.
So once we get that interim lease in place, and that'll help add some stability and answer a lot of questions for many of the folks who are out there and who can stay and then who's really going to have to look at other options.
Well, with the interim lease in place, we can actually start, and the way that we maintain the security is to actually start putting our own or our partners' activities in there, and we can then move forward, because we're the ones that will then be taking over the security at some point in time as part of that interim lease. Therefore, we have to have our own activities. When I say our own, I'm talking about the entire group, whether it be us, ASU, Alion, or somebody else, that then we can give some certainty or else start to plot out our future. We still have to wait till that economic development plan is approved and we move on, but I'm assuming that certainly would be a big step if we get the interim lease, that most everything else should probably fall in line.
If we have an interim lease, we're capable of issuing subleases.
Yeah.
Right now, we have no authority to do that.
And our ability to issue subleases means we would have the ability then to retain employees out there, because we'd have activities out there.
Yes, sir.
I assume, though, we were in constant contact with the folks out there about what the process is and...
Yes,
Vice
Chair Summers, we have met with the employees out at the site a few times throughout this process to keep them abreast of what's going on. And the last meeting we had was, I believe, January 11th, and we members from ASU and Alion were there to show our partnership that we're working on. And as Barry mentioned, we talked to them about the interim lease as well. So we keep them apprised.
That's the key word there, partnership. We're moving forward, all of us as a partner, in this direction, because there was also some confusion about what kind of conveyance was there going to be, economic development or education, going to ASU, public yes. use. So now that we have that, we need to march forward in unity, because I think that'll help tamp down a little bit of that anxiety, too, now that they know the direction that we're going to head. Yep. That accurate?
It is. Very accurate. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Any other questions? Before I turn this over to Dr. Dahm at the end of the table, I want to thank you for using iPads. In good bureaucratic fashion, that is the two documents. To make 20 copies of those for distribution just to council and appropriate people is going to burn up a few trees. So thank you for using iPads. Anyway, with that, and I mentioned our partnership with ASU and Dr. Werner Dahm and discussing ASU's Security and Defense Systems Initiative.
Dr. Dahm. Thank you very much, and good morning. I understand that we're under a time window here, so I'm going to keep my comments fairly brief. We really appreciate the opportunity to be here and give you a fairly compact description of what Arizona State University has planned together in close partnerships with the City of Mesa, with Alliance Science and Technology, with a number of industry partners that we are already engaged with, and as well with other universities in the state of Arizona that we are already formally partnered with, and those partnerships we anticipate to grow into the initiative that I'm going to describe to you here today. Very briefly, ASU is looking at establishing a specialized entity that will allow us, together with our partners, to make full use of the facilities and the personnel and all of the attributes that are there at the Mesa Research Site. Our goal is to go well beyond what you perhaps would imagine when you hear university involvement in an activity like this. It's going to involve conducting advanced technology work, as well as the ability to conduct very specialized work that makes use of the facilities out there. And that work is going to be done in a way that is going to bring in a lot of industry participation there. We understand that what the objectives are here for the City of Mesa. What we have envisioned is something that will contribute to saving the jobs of the military personnel, the government civilian researchers that are out there, the contractor personnel that are currently at the site. And in fact, for those who have decided not to make the move to Dayton, we were just out there this past week with them, giving them an overview of the Security and Defense Systems Initiative, and we've received very strong interest from them in being participants in that process and having the opportunity to continue as researchers in an appropriate role at that site. To put my comments into a very brief perspective, I started out my engineering career as a research engineer working for the U.S. Air Force and had no idea that I would, over the next 25 years, become a professor at the University of Michigan. 20-plus of those years were spent working in defense science, kind of one foot in classical academia, the other foot in a space that very few academics ever work in. That led to me serving 3 years on the Defense Science Study Group for the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency and the Institute for Defense Analyses, subsequently 4 years on the Defense Science Board, working for the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition Technology and Logistics, 3 years on the Air Force Scientific Advisory Board, and then most recently 2 years working in the Pentagon in a three-star equivalent civilian position as the top representative of science technology for all of the Air Force, as the chief scientist of the U.S. Air Force. I currently continue to serve on the Scientific Advisory Board for the U.S. Air Force, and so my engagement in defense science is something that's going to continue throughout the rest of my career. And that perspective is one that very few academics have the benefit of having, and it allows us here at ASU to put together an entity that can serve the needs not only of the Air Force science and technology community and the Air Force writ large, but actually all of the defense agencies and even the broader intelligence community. When you hear the word university, it's likely to conjure up an image of whoever may have stood at the front of a classroom when you were in a situation like that. If there is one message that I want to leave you with here today, it's that what's happening at ASU, right in your backyard, so to speak, is a complete rethinking of how universities will work and how they will serve society with all of its components. And like many things that happen right in front of you, they're so easy to miss. I know all of you are aware that ASU is far more than almost any other university, is a corporately run enterprise. It makes major strategically planned, corporately managed moves into large areas of research and does so on a scale that very few universities anywhere in the U.S. have the ability to do. Most universities are almost entirely bottoms-up driven. ASU is a has a strong top-down component to the way it even conceives of itself. It breaks the mold that constrains traditional universities from being able to make use of a site like what is at the current AFRL Mesa research site. ASU has a handful, and just a handful, of major ASU-wide initiatives. These are ones that ASU makes major investments in. The ones that you're perhaps most familiar with is the Biodesign Institute. It's been going for about a little over 6 years now. Just to put it in perspective, in this past year, Biodesign was an $80 million a year activity. Since its inception, more than $350 million of funds have been executed through the Biodesign Institute. Last year alone, over 60 invention disclosures were filed as a result of that activity, and there are over 500 people involved in the Biodesign Institute, and that is one of four major ASU corporately led research initiatives. So it'll give you an idea of the scale that prior initiatives like this have grown to at ASU, and that we hope the newest of these initiatives, the Security and Defense Systems Initiative, that I came from the Pentagon here to lead for ASU. So that's what we have planned. This chart is fine. I mean, this just gives you a snapshot of the breadth of what we call the security research space. Many people understand that to mean national defense and homeland security, and those are certainly the two single largest pieces of that. But it is a much, much broader enterprise that touches industries and applications that go way outside that. And especially for a key border state like Arizona, there are pieces of this that are very, very important to include in this broad security and defense understanding of what we're going to be doing. It reaches beyond what is often referred to as aerospace and defense. And I think that's very important to understand. If we can flip to the next chart, this is really the single piece that I'd like you to walk away from here understanding. It consists of three columns that together map out in very broad terms what we envision falling under the Security and Defense Systems Initiative. On the left-hand side is the classical university research model. It is the model that almost every single university in the United States confines itself to, and by not being able to envision ways of operating outside that traditional model, they are immensely limited in their ability ever to be able to contribute to the science and technology needs in the security and defense space. It is a model based entirely on faculty, students, and postdocs, all based on basic research, very fundamental foundational research that does not, by design, does not go to advanced technology development work, because that work cannot be published in scholarly journals. It is advanced engineering application of these foundational principles. It works at what are called technology readiness levels, TRLs, which is a way that we use to measure how mature technologies are. Typically, that's confined to TRL 0 to 2, maybe 3. Those are very, very early stage technologies. Science and technology in the Department of Defense goes through technology readiness level 6, which is probably an order of magnitude beyond in terms of time and dollar investment, well, several orders of magnitude in terms of dollar investment, what basic research TRL 2 involves. Very importantly, that traditional model has no ability to compartmentalize information. It is based on free exchange. Everybody talks about everything with everyone. whereas in advanced technology development, especially when we're engaging large numbers of industries, we have to be able to compartmentalize information for proprietary protection. Otherwise, those industries will not partner with us. And we have to be able to compartmentalize information for various sensitivities that have to do with national security. And both of those are things that a traditional university is unable to do. If there's a theme that runs throughout these handful of ASU-led initiatives, is that that university is willing to break that traditional model and conceive different ways of organizing itself structurally to be able to broaden and deepen its research impact. On the right-hand side of that chart, you'll see a column labeled industry. You could just as well say industry/government. Industry in particular has a very strong desire to partner with universities if those universities have set themselves up properly, and most have not. That desire stems from their need to be able to access early and mid-stage technologies, to be able to direct at the market spaces that they work in and a variety of contracting mechanisms that produce, like value engineering, that produce substantial secondary revenue streams to those industries. They seek an advanced technology development partner. Those few universities like MIT that have set themselves up that way have had tremendous success in working with industry. But unless you're structurally set up to be able to do that, it's game over. ASU has and is setting itself up to do that. The right-hand side and the left-hand side, I think many of you know, even if you don't live in that space, are fundamentally mismatched. You put those two sides of the picture into a room. They try to talk to one another. They try to partner. Occasional one-off successes happen, but they don't happen on the large, scalable level that we envision doing here at ASU. The middle column is what we call the special sauce to be able to make all this happen. It is an entity that we at ASU are setting up now that is going to allow us to bridge that mismatch between the classical faculty-student postdoc model of research and the real needs of industry and government writ large. It's an ASU-affiliated off-campus entity that will be staffed with between 50 and 60 professional research staff members, non-faculty. They will be measured by completely different metrics and therefore will be free to engage in activities that traditional faculty members are, for all intents and purposes, not able to do. They will be focused on advanced technology development work, including value engineering. They will have the clearances necessary to do specialized work through and including the full level of specialization that the Mesa Research Site facilities enable. They have the ability to compartmentalize for security and proprietary reasons. And that provides an environment that industry is familiar with and trusts as a partner for interacting with. In effect, from industry, the ASU side will look like that middle entity. It'll be a completely different environment than what they normally work with. And yet, internally, we'll have the ability to access the strong, deep technical breadth that ASU can bring to the table. So we're looking at the right-hand side, middle column, interaction and effective engagement with industry, a whole different way of engaging with industry. And between the middle and the left-hand column, a genuine intellectual participation of the type I just talked about. We have been out to the Mesa Research Site and spoken with the people there, as I said at the beginning, and gotten tremendous interest from them. They understand how this model works. And they understand the benefits that this can bring for continued use of that site. It provides us the ability to not only maintain many of the jobs that are there, but if you can understand properly what I've tried to describe here, albeit in a very compact way, this has the ability to massively grow what is out there. We are not interested in merely maintaining what is going on in the Mesa Research Site. We see a level of industry involvement that is going to grow the number and scale of industry involvement that's already there. It's going to be able to identify that site, certainly at the state and at the national level, as something that has a unique capability that industry can find in very, very few other places. And we believe that's going to attract a whole host of other industries to be able to draw from that. And, of course, the spin-off activities that will come from the technology development work that we do there is going to further grow that whole activity. The example I gave you of the Biodesign Institute shows you the scale that we think this can grow to. We don't know what the upper end is, but if we hit that level that Biodesign has and that ASU has concretely demonstrated that it can do using this corporately managed approach, a strategic approach to research, then I think we will have something here that is exceeds in scale by quite a bit what is currently out here and is a win for all of the partners that are involved. So I think with the interest of getting all of us out of here on time, I'll pause there, and if there are any questions, I'll be more than happy to try to answer them.
So, Doctor, what you're saying is that the Biodesign Institute in Phoenix, right, downtown?
It's here on campus in Tempe.
Tempe is an example. If somebody were looking for an example of what we're trying to accomplish, ASU, the City of Mesa, and the folks at the Research Lab as a partnership, the Biodesign Institute would be a good example of that collaboration between industry and advanced research and ASU on one side.
It's a good model in the broadest terms, in the sense that there is strong engagement of industry in that model. It does not have the classified piece to it that is central to what we're going to be doing at Mesa, so we'll have to organize ourselves in detail differently and appropriately to be able to use the Mesa site. But it shows that when ASU makes one of these president's level commitments to doing a major research play in an area, it shows the scale that that can grow to, and it shows our willingness to throw away the traditional model of academic organization that limits universities and conceive of a whole different way of setting ourselves up to draw from that.
I think it's also provides a really good anecdote to the potential for success and growth, taking what was a BRAC research lab and turning that into an economic and jobs generator, and having success with ASU is going to make it a very important partner. And in this case, you know, we have Biodesign in one hand, and now we're going to have aerospace and homeland security technology in another. It's going to be quite exciting for Arizona as a whole.
Yes, sir. You mentioned partner, and that is absolutely central to the business plan that we have for SDSI. These are very strong interactions with existing government contractors that we have relationships with industry and with other universities. While it's
and the City centered, of Mesa. City of Mesa. I got to do a plug for the perspective.
Absolutely. It is centered at ASU, but our perspective is much, much broader than that.
Terrific. Thank you, Mayor.
I'd just like to sort of add on to what the Vice Mayor said. One thing in here that, and I know we're talking wordsmithing here in semantics, but when we talk about potentially locating on current AFRL, let's make it clear. The City of Mesa does not view the research lab as an ends to a mean. It is merely a beginning. But on the other hand, we're making an investment with the idea and partnering with people we think that we can build upon based on the unique capabilities and the assets that exist at the Air Force Research Lab. And my discussions with Dr. Crow and Todd and Rick Changra and all those, I think we've made it clear that we looked at ASU to play a pivotal role with the idea that the activities would be focused and centered out there at Polytechnic and the Air Force Research Lab. I mean, that's the reason the city is willing to step up. And as Barry talked about, there are going to be significant investments in the research lab. We can't just expect to walk in, even if, regardless of the type of lease or conveyance we have, and take over a military facility which has been maintained for their mission, and expect it to achieve our mission, which is very different. Starts where the military left off, and the activities are somewhat the same, but our goal is obviously to grow this into something that's much bigger and much better, and that is much more widespread. We want to do this as a statewide, because we believe that the true potential in these types of activities statewide. And I know I appreciate what you're saying, what I read there about ASU's commitment and your plan, which is to really have an all-encompassing broad-based type of application. But frankly speaking, we hope that it's centered out there, and we wouldn't be making this kind of investment were it not out there. And I'd also like to mention the involvement of Science Foundation Arizona, which has been deeply involved in the latter stages of helping us to to really bring everything together, and to General Reggie and Mr. Browning have been really good at reviewing and offering us input and helping the parties come together, and we'll continue to play a role in as we move forward, Science Foundation Arizona, and hopefully this can also be the impetus for some big things to happen out of the Aerospace Institute, working all together. And these are not conflicting missions. These are not conflicting efforts. I want to make that clear. These are complementary, and each one has a very specific and important role in helping us to reach the full potential, not only the research lab, but also of our aerospace efforts in the East Valley and statewide. Okay?
Well said.
Any other questions? Comments?
Move to approve.
Let's go move on to item 1B, which is to take action on the resolution approving and authorizing submittal of the redevelopment plan and homeless submission report for the former Air Force Research Lab. We have a motion. I have a motion from the Vice Mayor Summers and a second from Councilmember Higgins. Sorry, Councilmember Kavanaugh. I should beat you. Any other discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you so very much. Really appreciate it.
Well done.
Thank you.
Okay.
No request, Mayor.
Councilmember Kavanaugh, second Councilmember Fenter. All opposed. All in favor say aye.
Aye.